Welcome everyone to Radio Free Nintendo, episode 341. I'm your host, Jonathan Metz, and with me as always are John Lindemann.
Hey, Johnny. What's going on, buddy?
Hey. James Jones.
Sup.
And replacing Guillaume Veillette, who is having computer issues this week, is our good friend, Billy Berghammer.
I'm Tom Nook's bitch once again.
Aren't we all? Billy is actually kind of replacing himself a little bit. So most of you hopefully don't know this, but Billy was actually here last week briefly. He had to leave in a hurry and he lost his audio file. And so Guillaume and I very carefully surgeried him out of the episode because it would have been too confusing to leave all those references in when we didn't have his audio. So and he felt bad about having to leave early. And so this week we've got him back for the whole show. And we're going to do kind of a shorter episode this week. It's going to be all one big segment and it's going to be all new business. But we're going to kind of broaden the scope a little bit and maybe talk about some things that maybe we wouldn't normally talk about. So I thought Billy could start us off. Billy, of course, right off the successful launch of Skulls of the Shogun on Steam. Check that out. And you can also hear him on the newest episode of 8-4 Play that was recorded in America.
America.
So you can hear a lot of Billy's post E3 reactions on that episode. But Billy, what have you been playing?
After I got back from E3, I bought The Last of Us on PS3 and then had to launch Skulls on Steam. So that kind of took over everything and I didn't get to play anything for a while. And I had Animal Crossing and I also downloaded Luigi, but I wanted to go to Last of Us first. I played all the way through it and I would say it is one of the best games I've played all year. Phenomenal. If you have a PlayStation 3, get this game. I mean, Naughty Dog is, you know, obviously a AAA studio, but holy crap. Like, and I don't want to spoil any of it because I went into it without spoilers, and I highly suggest avoiding any spoilers whatsoever because it's just the story and the way the game progresses, you know, it's better to go in blind. So I definitely highly recommend it.
All right, okay. I have to ask a question, though. Is it Uncharted with zombies?
No.
And if not, how does it differ?
Nathan Drake's not in it.
Obviously.
No half-tuck?
There's no half-tuck, but, you know, they don't do the same, like, traversal through environments where you have, you know, you're climbing all the glowing ledges and things like that. You still traverse environments, but it's more kind of puzzly towards, like, kind of like the rooms that you'd encounter in like Half-Life 2, where you might have to lift a board certain way to get across from point A to point B, or plus you're also leading a co-op character, not a co-op character, but another character through, as you've seen Joel with Ellie, like for example, she can't swim. So there's certain points where you might have to find something to help her get across like water areas. Yes, they don't call them zombies. Are they zombies? Kind of. They're like the fiction behind why they are what they are is actually real, sort of. Not to the point where it like infests humans, but whatever. The gunplay is still kind of the same as Uncharted, which means it's not very good, which is unfortunate. I think it's a little better than Uncharted, but
yeah, Uncharted has pretty bad gunplay.
But there's you know, more RPG elements where you have, you know, you get certain things in the environment, say like for melee weapons, you'll find like a baseball bat or a 2x4, and you'll find different things in the environment that you can enhance those weapons because you can't just roll through with the baseball bat the entire time. Like there's, it will actually diminish in time. So you can add a, like, I think it's like duct tape and a scissors or something like that to it. So it enforces the, or reinforces the melee weapon to make it stronger. But you can also, you can build bombs, you can build Molotov cocktails. You also find elements to make health items too. So, you know, you need to build first aid kits. And this is all in real time. So like
You combine the green herb with the red herb, and it makes a super powerful herb.
Yeah, it's kind of like that. But at least it rolls. It's kind of like Zombie U, where like if you're in your backpack, like the camera cuts away, and it takes time to actually like build out items. So
you're vulnerable during that.
Yes.
Okay, I'm glad you brought it up. I was actually going to ask you if you had played Zombie U and if you could compare these a little bit.
I haven't played too much Zombie U. I actually played more multiplayer Zombie U than I did single player.
That is very interesting. Do you like the... I mean, no one talks about the multiplayer in that game. Do you like it?
I thought it was really fun couch multiplayer.
So you're controlling the zombies?
It's kind of like Capture the... not Capture the Flag. Sure, at least the mode that we played. And I didn't play too much, so don't get me wrong. But... it's like capturing different waypoints. Like one person controls like the flow of zombies, kind of like the director in Half-Life 2, Left 4 Dead. It's kind of like that, but yeah, I thought it was really fun. But back to definitely not talking about the multiplayer in Last of Us. I'm trying to think the other differences for Last of Us. There's a lot more stealth to it. So like holding down R2, whichever, you know, when you're controlling Joel, like. It goes kind of in this like black and white mode where he has like enhanced hearing, so you can figure out where positionally the different enemies are, whether they're humans or zombies or whatever. So, you know, that's another difference between that and Uncharted. I mean, if you like Uncharted, I mean, I think you'll like this, even though it's totally a different game. I mean, it's not totally a different game, but like, It's just different. The whole vibe is completely different. It was really nice to see Naughty Dog like flex their muscles in a different capacity. It's definitely a serious, mature story. You know, I laughed, I cried, I was freaked out. Like, it's a lot of holy shit moments. It's awesome. I think it's the best game I've played all year, and I've played all the heavy hitters I think this year so far. So it's great stuff, and it looks fantastic. Like, it's just. It's phenomenal.
Yeah, so do you think it's the best game of this gen? That's what people were saying on the internets.
Yeah, that's a little much for me, but at least it's probably my game of the year so far. It's going to be tough to beat it, even with what I know that's coming down the pike. So it's awesome.
Does it hit you in a similar way to The Walking Dead from last year?
See, I didn't play The Walking Dead.
Oh, Billy.
I own it, but like... I haven't played it. I'm actually not a huge horror game guy.
That's not the point of The Walking Dead. It's a story game. Like, if you like characters, you'll like it.
I probably should hit that, you know, because, you know, there's situations that happen in Last of Us that make you feel uncomfortable, and just because of the situations that they're in. And I'm honest to God trying to avoid all spoilers because I think you guys need to play this game.
They make you feel uncomfortable in that. It just doesn't, like, the situation doesn't feel right, or the discomfort is the intention of the story.
The latter, yes.
Okay.
So, it's pretty cool. The multiplayer, I actually liked Uncharted's multiplayer, so I was kind of hoping this one, like, I haven't played too much of it yet, but it just seems tacked on. Like, I don't think it was necessary. I don't think every frickin' game needs to have multiplayer.
Yeah, it was actually good in Uncharted. I liked it. I didn't really play it that much, but it was good.
Uncharted, I played the crap out of that multiplayer because I really enjoyed how it played. And this one is a lot different. It's got a progression system in it and all sorts of stuff. I've got a lot of games that I still want to play this summer. So after playing that, I just wanted a break, and so I went on a completely different side and started playing Animal Crossing.
It's roughly the same.
Palate cleanser.
Well, after a 16-hour-ish experience, I mean, I'm kind of guessing on the time that it took me to beat Last of Us, but after that much intensity...
You need a cool down.
Tom Nook, fruits and fishing and shit.
Tom Nook to sign you up for a mortgage. Some old relaxing debt payment.
Like, you get to run the show, and I'm like, sweet, I paid $35, now Tom Nook's my bitch. I've been his bitch for years and years and years. Nope, you're still Tom Nook's bitch.
Yep.
You're not like mayor of Chicago. You don't get free gifts all the time. I mean,
pay the Nook.
You're just a civil servant. Still got to pay your dues.
I've only been playing for about 24 hours, but I paid up. Like, you have to first, you know, you choose where you want your house to be, but you're like, well, you need a housing permit, so you need to do all this other bullshit first.
Sounds strangely familiar to every other Animal Crossing game I've played.
No, because you never needed a permit to get a house. You didn't need construction licenses.
I mean, I understand why they did it, but I just found it funny, like, that I'm still paying Tom Nook 10,000 bells just to get my house again.
Yeah, I know. This is apparently another Tom Nook in some other dimension.
But that being said, like, at least from what I recall, like, I skipped the Wii version, but I did play a little bit of the DS version. But the main game, the one that I really sunk my teeth into, was the GameCube one. And this one, you know, it has the vibe of the GameCube version, outside of the fact that obviously the, you know, the NES classic games aren't in it. The online stuff was really cool. And I know it's not much different than the DS version, but I think it's just because more people that I know now are playing the 3DS version. Like,
well, I mean, yeah, the friend code system is so much better on 3DS.
Well, yeah, because there's a universal one.
Or just, I've noticed some of my friends will be like, hey, my gates are open, you can come in. And I'm like, sweet, because I need all of those, you know, I only had peaches, so I need all the rest of the fruits. So, you know, I visited two towns and I have all the fruits now. And, you know, I just started, you know, in 1 day's time of playing, which wasn't a whole straight day, but just when I was playing, you know, I amassed enough money to at least pay off my house. And I just remember my GameCube days, like, it took, you know, it just wasn't easy to visit other people because you had to swap memory cards, and it was just a giant pain in the ass. And, you know, I wasn't like I was living in, you know, I wasn't in grade school or high school or anything like that, so it wasn't, I had this like network of friends that played Animal Crossing, you know, so at least now I know a ton of people, like, you know, and like Neil, the director of Nintendo World Report, he, like, last night I opened my gates and, you know, I just left my 3DS open and just wasn't paying attention. And I came back and it was just like, he left me like a pile of stuff that I didn't have. Like, it was really cool. Like a Midna mask from Twilight Princess, which is cool. I was rolling around with that. And then I visited Brian Davis from, oh my God, I'm going to totally forget. The guys that made Luigi's Mansion for 3DS.
Yeah. From Next Level.
Next Level.
Yeah. So he saw me on Twitter last night, and so I saw his gates were open, so I rolled in there and stole some of his crap, and, like, it was just, it's really fun. Like, you know, and I kind of gave up on Animal Crossing for a long time, and granted, a lot of the same stuff is still there, like, you know, basically doing fetch quests and crap like that, and I haven't really seen all the other nuances and things that they changed about this game, but, like,
from what I can tell, a lot of it is that they've made things more convenient, and they've taken out some of the drudgery of the game. Yes. So, like, now you can stack up fruit, which means you can walk around with a whole lot more stuff.
Right.
You can – apparently, I just saw Andy and someone else were tweeting this on Twitter today, but they were saying that you can quickly change tools by using the D-pad.
Yes. I found out by accident last night, and it's so much easier.
Well, it's little stuff, like when you go to the museum to donate, it only brings up the items you can donate.
Yeah. Yeah, and you can have him, like, assess multiple fossils in one go.
I didn't know how you could stack fruit, so...
You just use the stylus on the touchscreen when you have the menu up. You just, if you have, like, two or three apples, they all have to be the same kind.
Right.
But if it's just regular apples, for instance, you have all these apples filling up your menu, you just drag one on top of the other, and it'll just say, now it'll say two. Then you drag them on top of another, and now it'll say three. So you can have up to 9 in one spot.
Couldn't they simplify that a little?
They could have just made it automatically stack when you pick up another fruit.
Like, say you were just going to, because you can't bury 3 fruits. So then you'd have to, yeah, that kind of makes sense. But
No, when you bury, it automatically just takes one off the stack.
Oh, okay.
This is kind of my problem with Animal Crossing, is it's very Japanese in this way. It's like a lot of Japanese RPGs. You end up spending way too much time in menus. And a lot of times they're very simple menus. You know, it's not like they have, it's not like you could easily do the wrong thing. And it's not like there's that much information being conveyed there. It feels like you constantly have to go, like, you know, for me, of course, maybe the D-pad fixes this. I haven't had a chance to try it yet, but it's like, I pull out the shovel, which means I have to go to the menu, click on the shovel and tell it to equip. And then I have to leave the menu. Then I have to use the shovel on the ground to dig up a fossil. Then I have to use the shovel again to cover up that hole so I don't have a hole in the ground. But now I have the fossil in my pocket. but then I can't go do anything else until I put the shovel away. So then I have to open the menu again and then click on my character's icon, and then it brings up another menu and it says remove equipment, and then the shovel goes back unless I filled up my last slot in the menu with the thing that I just dug up, in which case it won't let me put the shovel away until I create space in the menu. It's like just, it's this stuff, it feels like I'm constantly managing an inventory, constantly dealing with menus, and also like listening to people say the same crap over and over. Like, I like talking to the different characters, that's not a problem. But when it's like, you know, when you go into the Timmy and Tommy or whatever, the little kid raccoons who like have the shop where you go buy things, it's like every time you want to go in there, they go through this whole rigmarole about welcome, blah, 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 blah. And then you go and sell them something and say, well, you can only get this once per day. And it's like, it's just paging through stuff I've already seen a dozen times and I've only owned the game for 2 weeks. How sick am I going to get of this by the time I actually get deep into the game? I just feel like so much of that could be streamlined. It is charming, but that doesn't mean I need to see it over and over and over and over again.
So my other question, because you've been playing it longer than I have, is, so say you have three friends over in your village, okay?
I have not used the online yet, so I can't answer any questions about that.
I want to know if you can actually do shit with them. Like, are there mini games? Is there fun crap to do?
I doubt it.
Historically, it's been a make-your-own-fun kind of thing.
Play tic-tac-toe with digging holes in the ground?
Well, I mean, you can do stuff like hide-and-seek. But yeah, I mean, it's pretty simple. It's like the games you could play as a kid.
I'm just wondering what benefits there are. I mean, what's the point outside of like trading fruit and shit like that?
On the Wii version, I had people come over to help me with like massive land reclamation projects, where I'm moving stuff around and doing things in the village.
Just like Neil did, you can leave gifts for people. You can prank people, you know, so you can go and mess up their town or something like that.
Oh, I did that when the DS one, I forget who I was playing with, but I was playing with a buddy of mine in Australia, and he was like, yeah, I'll leave it open. I'm going to bed.
Chop, 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 chop.
And I just worked the crap out of his village. Like, I dug holes everywhere. All of his trees were gone. Like, I just basically fucked his game up, which I feel bad now. Like,
animal trolling is actually what it is.
Because now what I'm wondering too, like, so say I do that, or like, is there a way for, like, because you work so hard on like making your, you know, like, I'm really anal on like how I place my fruit trees and like getting everything set up.
There's a whole science to it too.
No, the whole point is you only let in people you know.
Right, and if they betray your trust, you fuck them up as bad as you can.
It's kind of your fault, and yeah, the best you can hope for is maybe some reprisal.
You roll up the posse and go into their village and just torch the crap out of it.
Yep, all the trees set on fire.
By the way, did you see Reggie's mansion?
Yes, that's ridiculous. And he totally did not play that shit.
No. I'm sure someone hacked that for him, he had an intern get all that crap for him, but... So if people don't know, the Street Pass feature of Animal Crossing is that when you Street Pass people, their home shows up in a home gallery in the top part of your town. And you can go up there and just basically browse people's homes. And it's kind of interesting because you can go in there and you can kind of see what they think is important, or the items that they really worked hard to get, or just the interesting layout that they have for their home. And I don't know that it's like the coolest thing ever, but like it is, you know, you can put some personality into the way that you arrange this stuff and into the items that you select out of the many hundreds and hundreds of items that are in the game. Well, Nintendo did this special thing where they sent Reggie to you. Basically, they used Spot Pass over the internet to make the game think that you had a Street Pass with Reggie. So it's exactly the same thing, even though you didn't actually...
Well, it's just like what they do in the Mii Plaza.
In the Mii Plaza, right. It's the same thing, but in this case, he goes directly... He actually showed up in my Mii Plaza, even though he never showed up in the at the gate in the Mii Plaza. So he only went to Animal Crossing, and so I went in there, and he has a three-story house that's probably about six rooms total, and they are filled to the walls with insane Nintendo memorabilia and just crazy, crazy stuff. And like, a lot of it is probably really hard to get. I don't know. You can't necessarily just look at something and tell how rare it is or how expensive it would be to get it. But it's just some wacky stuff. And it's like,
I thought you could buy stuff you saw in people's houses.
You can buy certain things. There's some things that are like a limited edition or whatever that you're not allowed to buy. And also everything's really expensive.
Well, yeah.
But it's a convenient way to get it because you don't have to go and like kind of find it in the game or get some random drop.
So how do I get... Because I watched the video, I guess, that was on the 3DS of him... this fake crap, like, here, welcome to my house, and he like walks into a house and like does this whole like video tour bullshit, and like, but so do I guess I'll dick around with my 3DS, but I was just curious, like, how do I see that from within Animal Crossing, because I didn't get any messages or anything. Like, maybe it's I have to go into Spot Pass or something like that.
No, as long as you've got Spot Pass turned on, which I think it asks you when you first turn the game on. All you have to do is just go to the Street Pass area at the top of the town.
Okay, I'll try
so
that.
You just go up to the shopping district, and then at the top of that is Isabel, it's her sister or whatever, and she's up there. And it's not unlocked from the beginning of the game. You have to do get the development permit before they allow you, or you have to at least get your house.
Okay.
So you can't be in the tent anymore. But once you get in the house, it shows up like the next day.
Okay, I'll try that.
It's neat. It's neat. I mean, it's honestly neat to walk around in there and look at all the crazy stuff he's got in his house. There's a bed, like, in the basement, I think, and the bedspread is this meticulously, you know, pixel-by-pixel design of Reggie's face.
Yes.
Oh, wow.
I tried to buy it, but it wouldn't let me.
Because you can swap out your Animal Crossing head for your Mii face somehow, and I got to figure out how to do that.
Yeah, I don't know. It might be one of those time-gated...
But that's how you can make your own bedspread with your face on it if you so desire. But one thing I also thought was really cool, so the online stuff, like I visited Bloodworth, a fellow former Planet GameCube guy, staffer, who works at Game Trailers. I visited his town last night, and if you become best friends with them, you can chat, even if you're not visiting... either person's town. If you're, as long as you're, you know, your 3DS is online, you can have chat going between you and your best friends all the time.
Animal Crossing party chat,
which I think is actually kind of nice.
How does this work? You're saying outside of the game?
No, I mean
you're not in each other's villages.
Correct.
Oh.
Like if you visit my town, you can hit that like. The thing in the lower right hand or lower left hand corner that has like the three dudes, and that's where you see who's in your town. There's like a heart that's next to somebody's name, and you can hit that and you say, do you want to be best friends with this person? You're like, hell yeah. And then you hit that, and then you can automatically chat within Animal Crossing, even if you're not in each other's towns. It's really nice. It's like Bloodworth was just giving me a bunch of tips and crap. You know, because I was just rookie last night, just kind of begging people to open their town so I could rape and pillage their fruits and stores and stuff.
Let me in!
Well, because at night, because you can set the time for your stores to be open at night, but it's not much later until much later in the game. So, you know, I wanted to get my bug net, and I wanted to get my fishing pole, and I wanted to, you know, I wanted to make sure that I had all the crap that I needed so I could actually do stuff last night and make enough money to pay off my house. So I did some fishing, which I think is fun. I wish it was a little more active than just pressing A. I wish they would take this franchise further. And granted, I know that there's new kids that have never played this before.
If you're running around in this game looking for the mechanics, you're not going to find them.
Yeah.
It's an experience.
The game actually bears a lot in common with fishing casually versus fishing professionally, where you just kind of sit there and you're like, yeah, I might catch a fish, whatever. This is more about being chilled than anything else.
Yeah.
Yeah, but like the fishing in Zelda, I thought had more...
Oh, yeah. But you can also put on iron boots and your blue tunic and walk underwater.
Yeah, I understand that.
And keep in mind, in this game, you're going to fish for like a million hours versus in Zelda where you're going to fish for like one.
Yeah, see, that's the problem I have with it. You know, it's just the fact that the mechanics really, they never really change. That's the thing, right? So you spend all this time, but the mechanics don't really change.
I think that's part of the appeal for some audiences, though.
I guess. See, to me, it just after a while, it just feels grindy and pointless. That's my problem.
Well, Animal Crossing is grindy and pointless.
Yeah.
Some people like it anyway.
It's $35 to do chores.
Yeah. I never understood the appeal, really. But...
I really, the writing is fucking hysterical still, and like, you know, because that's all done, I'm assuming, I think it's still done by the Treehouse guys.
I would think so.
It's tip top, and like, it's just fun. And you know, I haven't played it for like, Christ, 10 years, you know, and some of the same characters will come back, like you see Rossetti again, and because I forgot to save when my closed my 3DS or something stupid, and you know, Rossetti bitched me out again, and which I was like, cool, like that's funny, and you know, it's just, for me, it's familiar, and I wanted something that was just not really a game, just kind of chill on the couch and fart around with it, and fortunately now I've got a lot of friends that have 3DSs that decided to pick it up, and so I'm also curious to see how the whole Street Pass functionality, especially with PAX coming up.
Oh, it's going to be nuts.
And I brought my 3DS to E3, and this is the first E3 that I didn't like bring a bag with me and have my 3DS with me all the time, which I'm still kicking myself because I have so much more Street Pass crap to do. So I got to wait until PAX, because PAX is just a freaking gold mine for that stuff. So
it is.
You can go to PAX and just find a well-trafficked hallway and just sit down and do Street Pass all day long.
I go to the panels, and you know, the panels are great, and I'm listening to the panels, and I'm just hitting A, just cycle these motherfuckers through.
Hold down the R button, just keep it, tape it down,
that's right.
You're not even necessarily playing anything while you do that, but it's entertaining. You get to see people's me's, and you get to see where they come from, and then, you know, you're kind of collecting these puzzles, or you're...
And they're dumb quotes.
Yeah, your map lights up. It's like, oh, somebody from Canada, somebody from Europe, somebody from here, somebody from there. It's
awesome. You're just collecting things, basically.
Yeah.
It's cool. So, but yeah, I like Animal Crossing. I think it's fun. As I said, I wish they added some more meat to it. But, you know, that being said, you know, it is what it is, and it's pretty cool.
All right, so John, I heard you were playing some Monster Hunter, and that is something that Billy also knows about.
Yeah, so, you know, I've kind of been sort of meandering from game to game here. I've been on sort of a
vision quest of gaming, if you will.
A little bit of a backlog sort of thing. But, you know, I came back to Monster Hunter just because, you know, Monster Hunter is perpetually unfinished business as the nature of the beast. I came back to it and I just decided, you know, I'm still working through the single player stuff. Ever so slowly. And I've put about 20 hours into it, and just to give you an idea of the scope of it, I mean, really, I'm still Hunter rank 1. So I've put a whole bunch of time into it, and, you know, you move very, very incrementally. So some of the stuff I've kind of been encountering has actually, you know, it's actually drawn me further into it, because you actually get into, this is the first time where I've really actually tried to start trapping monsters, which is a pain in the ass until you realize how to do it.
Mm-hmm.
And of course, you're not really going to learn that from the game itself unless you dig through about 3 menus and kind of and happen upon the right wall of text.
There's a tutorial where a guy just goes, "Hey," over and over again while the text scrolls.
Yeah.
That's just God telling you that you should be playing the good version of this game and you should be playing it online.
Well, buying a Wii U is a hefty price to pay, but I'm going to start calling this FAQ Hunter, because that's really just pretty much what you need for Monster Hunter. For a lot of things. But and the thing is, really, I was thinking this the other night, where this is really the only game where I would actually recommend buying some sort of like Bradley Games guide for it, because
you mean Brady Games,
yeah.
And it's actually digital. You said Bradley, but there's a digital guide.
It's not Brady. It's like just a guy wrote it, but I've heard it's very good.
Yeah.
Well, there's two digital ones, but the official one is a Brady one that. It's a digital guide only, which is nice. It's nice to have.
Yeah.
There's definitely a lot of shit you need to learn in this game. And that's why,
yeah.
No offense, I understand you don't have a Wii U, but like by playing it online, like the community has taught me so much about the game that like single player is like only if I'm on my 3DS and I can't get online, because especially when we did the community nights with NWR, like these guys taught me so much shit about this game that I had no idea about.
Mm-hmm.
And just little, because there's so many different weird nuances with this game.
There are.
You know, if you're just playing offline and you're playing single player, yeah, you could definitely need a FAQ. But if you're not, I mean, the community is ridiculously nice. It's a welcome change to playing online games on like Xbox Live or PSN.
You know, one thing I wouldn't be surprised at all out there either, if we're talking about guides, is I'm relatively confident somebody out there has probably posted a ridiculously comprehensive video guide on YouTube somewhere.
Yeah, I mean, there's guides all over the place, but the fact is, like, really, you have to go to them. You have to search out the information.
Right.
Because there's so much stuff, you know, you have combo lists, how you can upgrade your armor, upgrade your weapons. The stuff that I was looking for, like, there's, like, you could write an entire guide on what type of movements monsters make when you can tell that they're trappable.
Yes.
This monster limps. This guy walks around with a broken wing. This guy does this. This guy does that. And the thing is, I mean, the first quest where they really have you trap a monster, man, I did it. I must have done it probably about 5 or 6 times over because I wasn't exactly sure how to trap him. And so, of course, I went to an FAQ, and it was just like, lay down a trap. When he gets into the trap, hit him with 2 trank bombs. That's it. And once I found that out, I got it like right off the bat, pretty much.
Was the guy different depending on what you were trying to capture?
No.
Okay, so it's not like for this creature, you need to throw a stun bomb and then 2 sleep bombs.
Nah, but I have a feeling though, with the monsters, as the further you get into the game, you would have to do different types of things to get them.
Yeah, it's true, and plus, and the reason why you trap them is because you get better loot instead of skinning. You get the better stuff, man. Definitely, it comes in handy, especially when you're like, when you're farming the same frickin' boss over and over and over and over for your whole armor set.
That's exactly it, right? That's what you get into, is you realize that, you know, after going through a bunch of quests, you realize that you're pretty much capped in terms of what you can do with the current armor that you have. So that's when you have to go back in. And this is possibly where the game could fall apart for me, where you're literally just going in and doing quests over and over again, grinding to get certain drops or harvest certain things. Because, and this is also where a guide would come in handy, because you would have, I don't know how they handle it on Wii U, whether you can access this. I could see this, it would be helpful to have the gamepad to look up this information, but to be able to, this is the one thing you can't do on the 3DS is, you know, because effectively for every piece of armor in the game, there's a list of ingredients that you need to make it. Mm-hmm. And so having that, being able to look down at your gamepad and having that right there, so you could say, oh, okay, well, you would probably still need a guide to know where to go to get the stuff, but having that information right there would be really helpful. So I don't know how they handle that on Wii U.
Well, on the Wii U, you play it online and people tell you where the shit is and you go get it. and these guys know, like, even like when you're lower HR rank, which is your hunter rank, you know, when you're lower HR rank, like, elder people will come in there and help you out with the quest that you're doing because they need some of the same materials that you do to build some of their crap. So, you know, you're like, I need this certain ore. Where the hell is it? And they're like, oh, it's in part 6 if we do, you know, if we kill this mob. And so, you know, that's it. And that's why, like, I played single player and, you know, I hope you're enjoying it because there are a lot of fun parts about it. Mm-hmm. And you can farm a lot of stuff that way. Single player is just a lot easier. And I think it looks phenomenal on the 3DS. But, man, I swear to God, like, I've learned so much stuff and gone on some, like, the most epic, crazy multiplayer quests, like riding on a moving boat where you're chasing something that's as big as a football stadium and people are manning ballistas and bows and firing on this thing. And like, it's just nuts, crazy shit. Like,
sucks if you have a sword.
No, you can still whack away at this thing. I mean,
well, it would attack the boat, right?
Because
right.
It attacks the boat, and then you jump off the boat onto this giant thing and start beating the crap out of it.
Yeah.
You can also mine it while it's there. Like, you can just do all it's crazy.
That's awesome.
Ridiculousness, but, like, it was super intense. And I was like, man, like, this is worth keeping and playing this game. Like,
yeah. I mean, that's the thing. I mean, you do have a lot of epic stuff in there where the thing is, you have to – that's kind of the hook that pulls you in, is the fact that you have to work – and that's kind of what the whole game is based on, is the fact that you have to put in work and you have to learn all this shit. But when it pays off, it's so gratifying. Like, when I finally did trap that monster, because what happened was I put the trap down and the monster ran away into like a little hidey hole. And I didn't know if he was coming back. And I didn't know if I left the zone, would my trap go away? I didn't know because it was the last one I had. And if I lost it, I was pretty much screwed. But I left the zone and the trap was still there when I came back in. So I was like, okay, well, let's just see what happens. The monster comes back in and it just kind of was sitting there around the trap, and I'm like, are you going to hit it? Are you going to not hit it? And so finally he hit the trap. I used my last two trank bombs, and I was like, yes! Fucking trap that motherfucker. Boom! Objective cleared. And that was awesome. That was awesome. Because I worked so hard. It took me so long to do that, and I finally figured it out.
So if you need to farm, like, especially if you have to kill, like, 10 of these monsters, you know, because not every drop is always there.
Yeah.
Especially when it's just, like, certain parts of a monster. That's why playing online, when you have to farm this guy, like, literally 10, 12 times, having to do that yourself just takes, you know, it could be a battle that takes half hour, 45 minutes. But online, you know, you could take that sucker down in 5, 10 minutes maybe and just,
yeah,
like, re-queue up and do all that stuff, so...
But then don't you have to compete for the loot?
Nope.
Oh, is it everybody gets a copy of everything? Oh, okay.
Oh, that's sweet. See, yeah, I was wondering about that.
Yeah, because that's normal MMO conventions, and they suck.
That's smart, but why would the game designers make you need 10 or 12 of those things? That's what I don't get. Why would they ever want you to do the same thing 10 or 12 times just to complete an objective?
Why does it take so much metal to build this car? I mean, that's sort of what they would say.
Takes materials.
Well, building a car isn't a game.
Part of the game is collecting the materials. That's it. I mean, to them...
It is.
It's if the game was just about getting more crap on your character's avatar, go buy Style Savvy. I mean, for them, the game is about collecting this stuff. To them, that's the game.
I understand the objective. It's the means to the end that I object to. It's that it's so grindy. It's that you're... literally fighting the same battle over and over and over again. And, you know, maybe the monster behaves a little bit differently each time. But the same reason, you know, like when EAD Tokyo makes a Mario game and they repeat the same boss three times. You know, I will complain about that over every single time they do it. And that's the same reason that I would get really annoyed with Monster Hunter. If they're going to make me go and do the same mission four or five times, you know, just to get the reward that I'm looking for, I mean, that's ridiculous. Like, show some respect for the player. At least have you go do two or three different things in order to get that objective.
And I think that's a valid complaint. I mean, I have a high tolerance for that. I can do grindy stuff a lot. You know, I play MMOs. There's a lot of grindy stuff in MMOs. I've been grinding RPGs. I remember in Final Fantasy, which one was it? Final Fantasy VI, I think? Maybe Final Fantasy VII, I grinded all my characters up to level 99.
To do what?
To go after all of the weapons. Ruby weapon, emerald weapon, diamond weapon. I beat that. That's one of the few RPGs where I beat everything in that game. So, and I literally sat there, I forget there was one particular creature that gave a ton of experience. I sat there and grinded that guy for hours. I don't know, I have a high propensity for grinding. I'll say that.
I guess so.
But not everybody does, and I completely realize that.
I do up to a point. I will get bored, and it kind of depends. Like if I can, you know, if the grinding has some built-in variety to it, if I'm at least doing different things and at least cycling through different activities, then maybe I can, you know, and if my progress is very clearly charted as I go and I feel like I am making progress, then it depends, you know. So, John, I think we'll probably come back to you with some more about grinding in a little bit, but I wanted to talk to James. James, which one of your games do you want to bring up first?
I kind of want to talk about both because this could sound really weird, but I kind of have the same thing going on for both of them.
Another one of these bizarro tag team comparisons like Guillaume had last week.
Well, it's a little bit different in this respect.
Are you going to talk about being at the beach and all that?
John, if being at the beach had actually happened this week, that would have been a lovely improvement over what has. But I guess first I'll talk about Fable 3, which is the game that Microsoft gave away during their press conference. They announced, oh, if you have gold, you're going to get games.
Well, you know why? It's priceless, James.
Because it's a game that currently retails for like $6. So it is what it is. But I don't want to talk too much about the game because the game itself isn't very good. The reason it's not very good, I mean, besides the fact that it reused basically every single asset they could physically manage to reuse from its predecessor, is that it doesn't try to do all that much, and yet it continually talks about how it's giving you choices and how your choices matter. The problem with this game, and I've seen it in some other games, but it's so, like, you can see the seams on reality tearing so blatantly, obviously, here, is games that just decide to give you choice, and the choice has no value whatsoever. Ultimately, it's transparently obvious that what you're doing isn't real, isn't affecting anything materially. So in this game, the primary objectives, it's the game is split in half. The first half of the game is this cannonball run of rounding up and helping assorted villages to ultimately overthrow your brother and install yourself as king. The second half of the game is just a bunch of big, dumb sessions where you sit down on the throne and rule on individual elements of kingdom policy. The problem here is that once you take the throne, you find out the reason your brother was running what would be like the ultimate, most evil depiction of capitalist society, like industrialization London times a million times worse.
Like they're putting 3 months old to work in factories.
They were putting children to work and not paying them.
Okay.
Yeah, I mean, it's so over the top that the game loses itself in it.
But that's what Molyneux said. That was what Fable 3 was supposed to be.
The game is supposed to just be incapable of getting a point across because it's so lost in its own hyperbole.
Well, that doesn't surprise me a whole lot, but you know, the biggest problem is that you're supposed to talk to a lot of people, and every conversation fades to black.
Well, it does do that.
When you start a conversation with somebody, it fades to black, and then it loads the conversation stuff, and then you finish your little fucking conversation, and then it fades to black again. It's not all in game. Are you fucking kidding me? This is the Xbox.
The thing is, they're in the in-game engine, which doesn't make any sense. Why it does that?
It totally takes you. It takes you completely out of the game, and you have to talk to a lot of motherfuckers.
Oh
in this
god,
game.
All day, all night.
And Fable 2 didn't do that at all. Fable 2 was actually really fun.
I love Fable 2.
Yeah.
The thing is, at the second phase of the game, you have the choice of being this evil dictator asshole that your brother was, or being a kind and benevolent ruler. The quote kick here is that you find out that you have these divine godly powers that are bestowed upon you genetically, and everybody acknowledges that you have them and that you see visions and that you understand the future and all this ridiculous bullshit. Everybody in the world accepts that you are effectively the avatar of divinity. So you would think that whatever you say would go relatively unquestioned, but you're constantly at the end. Well, you're told in that second half of the game, oh, in a year, shit's going to get real and stuff's going to be popping off all over the place. And if you don't save up a bunch of money, everybody's going to die. And then for the remainder of the game, you're just given these really, really vastly opposed choices on either spend a million gold building like the most ornate orphanage in the world or putting 3-year-olds to work in slave labor. And there's never middle grounds. It's like they'll come to you and like, well, we need to build a school. And then the industrialist is like, we need slaves.
Very nuanced choices.
Everybody knows I am divinely inspired. So I could say, hey, hold off on your school for a year. Hey, let's not use 3-year-old slaves. And guys, I know this is kind of a delay of the plan, but we kind of need this money right now. There's a big ass swarm of bullshit coming. Just trust me on this one. I'm kind of a god. But he never does that. And in fact, the one time the game acknowledges this, it basically goes, oh, but the people won't believe you. It just hand waves it all away. I'm like, the fuck? Really? So you make all your decisions. You're either a dictator asshole jerk or you're just, you know, burning money out like nobody's business. And then you would think, okay, well, this is really going to affect your ending. But it doesn't, because you can just leave the game on overnight and collect rent and then pay off. And in the end, it doesn't make a bit of difference. The only thing that happens is there's a few more dead bodies on the ground if you spend all the money.
And that happens. You know, you got to make an omelet, you got to break a couple eggs.
In a couple places, like, that part of town looks different because you made a decision. But, I mean, it's so transparent that even while it's happening, you can see that this makes no difference. That ultimately what you're doing isn't really going to materially affect what happens. I mean, if you saved no money, I guess everybody dies.
This kind of gets to something that's going on in gaming in general. It's been a trend, and it goes back, and maybe like this started with Chrono Trigger, this idea that the way you play the game can change the ending. And maybe at the time that was so mind-altering for people that they couldn't believe it, and it made them want to play the game over and over again. But now it feels like it's becoming so poorly executed. And, you know, with the Mass Effect 3 controversy and with this game, and I've heard of Infamous 2 was really, really bad about this too. And it feels like they're throwing you into like weird moral quandaries for the purpose of changing the movie that you get to watch at the end of the game.
Right.
Yeah.
If choice really matters when you play the game, maybe that should affect the game while you're playing it. And maybe you shouldn't, maybe the ending's going to be what the ending's going to be. But how about the choices that you make as you play the game have direct consequences? Like Walking Dead does a really good job of that. And I'm sure it's a complete pain in, it's complete pain in the ass because they have to, you know, maintain all these different branches of possibilities all the way through. But it's very convincing, you know, and it doesn't make you want to play the game over and over again. It makes you care more about the one time that you do play it. And yeah, Heavy Rain sort of does that, but not really. And
it has its own issues that are somewhat different.
It sure does.
The problem really, though, is it's so much worse when you can see the sort of reality tearing while you're playing the game. Like, you can see, this really makes no difference, whatever. And it completely removes any desire to press forward, and it takes any of the moral pressure off these decisions. I mean, okay, so there's less dead bodies on the ground, but I enslave children. Well, nobody really cares except some people boo me when I walk around town. Well, why am I the king walking around town anyway? It's like, the difference is, it's just, it's such a poorly constructed narrative around decision making. And it just seems like Johnny said, there's other games that have tried this recently, and they just don't have the skill to pull it off. And I don't know, it really, that game's not great. I mean, Fable 3 is not a great game, but that really made the game just feel stupid. And it didn't feel dumb before, it just felt not well executed. And there's two types of dumb game. There's dumb where it's enjoyable, and there's dumb where it just goes, this is really stupid. Why am I even bothering?
Seems like a pointless exercise.
Yeah, it's like, this has no value, why do I even bother?
So what was the other game that went along with it?
So the other game I have to talk about...
Another dumb game that has no point?
This is not quite what I'm going to say here, but the other game that I've been playing... when I have the very limited free time I've had lately, is I got a whole big collection of games and Amazon had that 3DS sale. And the first one that showed up, unfortunately, was Kid Icarus Uprising. So I made a promise to myself that I would never buy this game full price because every time I played it at events, I thought, this is the worst control scheme I've ever seen. And I didn't. I bought it like $10, $15 off, something ridiculous like that. And these are bad controls. But to me, what takes me out of this game, and it's different from, obviously, the illusion of choice, because that's not at all an issue here, is there's just a handful of things where they decided to do something with the gameplay or with the writing that just doesn't work. So, obviously, the controls aren't good, but like the fact that to page the screen around, you have to wipe it from edge to edge, as opposed to using like bounding boxes like Wii U games did. With the pointer, just try to handle your swipes. You're constantly just swiping the screen to turn. The fact there's not really a lock-on system, so you can stay locked on one target while you're on foot.
I thought there was a lock-on.
I've not found it. If there is, the game's done a shitty job telling me about it. Which is funny, because to me, what really bothers me about this game isn't the controls. It is the incessant fucking talking. I have never played a game where, I put up with a lot of bullshit. I play a lot of JRPGs. I can handle the shit. But I have never seen a game where the characters talk about so much garbage in my life. I mean, they're not even talking about stuff that's related to anything. They're just talking to talk. And it's made me put the game down multiple times. I'm like, I just can't listen to you talk to this goddess for the next 7 minutes. I just can't do it. I mean, the shit you're talking about is you're talking about how much it would be fun to eat an ostrich egg. I don't care. It's an egg. Whatever. God.
It's meant to be funny, and I think it is amusing. I don't think it's hilarious or anything, but I think it's amusing. But I did start to feel towards the second half of the game that it was getting pretty old. And if it really turns you off... Now, I do think the voice acting is much better in the final game than it was at E3.
The voice acting, you know, it's a lot of VA retreads, so these are all professionals.
It sounds like a Saturday morning cartoon. Yeah. You know, I mean, it sounds like a Ninja Turtles cartoon, basically.
Yeah, but the dialogue is shit, though.
There's just so... It is so bad, and there's so much of it, and it goes on for so... There is a mission I played where I was beating the game faster than the game was prepared to let me beat it. So, like, their dialogue is, like, trying to catch up to where I am in the level. So they just stop mid-thought and talk about something else. And there's, like, there's three gods and there's this flame avatar flying by. There's Pit being a complete loser. I mean, it's just people are talking and breaking the fifth wall in ways that aren't funny.
The fourth wall, you mean?
Fourth wall. Sorry, the fourth wall in ways.
Oh, or was that a 3D joke?
Oh, sure. We'll go with that.
Because that's two screens.
There's just so much stuff that, like, it's distracting from the game. And I just wonder why they thought this all needed to be in there.
Yeah, it sounds like they're almost trying to be too clever for their own good. All this stuff is just, they thought it was so witty that they just had to include it all in there.
There are a handful of jokes that actually land, but I'm trying so hard to just not pay attention to them that I miss them usually.
You should play something that you like.
James doesn't actually like video games.
You seem to be just very angry, and I would be angry too if I was playing Fable 3 and Kid Icarus.
Everybody, I mean, on staff, Kid Icarus got a lot of love from the staff, and I just kept going, maybe this game will work for me eventually, and it just never did. I mean, the flying stuff, I think that's fine. I think if the game was just the flying stuff, this would be a really good game.
It would be Sin and Punishment, so it would be 3 hours long, and it would be...
It would be Sin and Punishment, which means it would be a really good game.
It's never as good as Sin and Punishment, and it's definitely never as good as Star Fox, which I still think is better than Sin and Punishment, especially Sin and Punishment 2.
That's fine, but the on-foot stuff...
It's bad, and...
It's bad, and it seems like they know it's bad, but they just had their heads shoved so far up their own asses they couldn't admit it and change it.
Well, and it's not just bad controls. It's bad level design.
Oh, yeah, and the platforming is garbage. And
it's bad combat scenarios that they throw you into where the enemies are just constantly getting behind you, and it, you know, it feels like you're fighting the camera more than you are the enemies most of the time.
I mean, that's what I'm saying. You have to swipe the camera to move it around. There's just no reason for this. It's it bothers me so much that all that they showed this game a bunch of times, and the feedback was always, these controls suck. And they did nothing about it. It just doesn't make any sense. I mean, I think you can use the Pro, but only to make the game left-handed, right?
Yeah.
It's like, why the fuck did you do that? Just let me use the Pro.
It's not even that. Really, the game should be on rails, even if you're on foot.
It should be.
Sin and Punishment has on foot, on rails levels, where your character's just running. And you just focus on the shooting, and you can still move around. But the problem is they create these 3D levels that you can roam around in, and they don't have any kind of intelligent camera system.
No.
You know, so you're constantly having to manage the camera with the touchscreen. And I'm going to say there are people who have mastered it, but I think it's very unwieldy.
Yeah.
And at best, it's extremely difficult to learn how to do it well. I feel exactly the same way you do about the game, James. And I lost this game. My copy of it lost with my 3DS last summer. Mm-hmm. And I never for one second considered rebuying it. I was going to try to finish it just for the sake of finishing it, because I'd already made it, you know, far enough. And I was interested in seeing, you know, kind of like Asura's Wrath, like the cutscenes and the bosses and the levels are so crazy. You go to space.
Oh, yeah, it's nuts. And there's an alien invasion. It's fucking crazy town. There's a level you play as a dog.
Yeah. It's very amusing and weird. And I fully support stuff like that. And there's a lot to like about Kid Icarus Uprising. But at the end of the day, your game has to play well. And this one doesn't.
It's remarkable how unpolished it is in one really core asset of the game when they did all this other stuff. And I connect these two in my head mostly because there's one or two glaring issues that anybody you would have brought in to show this game would have gone, whoa!
Yeah.
In both cases, we're dealing with developers that are notorious for being somewhat up their own asses who would go, no, it's fine. It's fine.
And also people that nobody would question either, right?
Oh, no, I think people question Peter Molyneux all the time.
Well, no, probably not to his face.
That's different.
Yeah, but I mean, this is a situation where, like, Johnny mentioned a good one. Just like there was a level I was playing earlier today where you had to walk these narrow platforms as Pit, but he keeps running. Every time I try to make him walk, he runs and falls off the side. It's like, oh my god, just stop, please.
The main problem with the game is that it should have been... You know, it's a game that was designed for two sticks.
It is.
The problem is the hardware does not have two sticks.
Billy, I don't think this game would play well if you had a mouse and keyboard.
It would play better, I think.
I don't think two sticks would fix this game. I don't think any controller would fix this game. The mechanics are bad. The control in the code that runs the control is bad. The camera is bad. These are the fundamental problems. I mean, I've played games where you control the camera. I've played first-person shooters where you control the camera with the stylus. I've played Mario 64.
Oh my God, I forgot about that.
It works, man. It works. There's a way to do it that works, and it doesn't work in this game because it's just not designed properly. That's the problem. It's not the hardware's fault. It's not that it's a bad fit for 3DS. It's that it's a bad game. I'm sorry, people. I know people love it. I'm not trying to take that away from anybody, but
I am incredibly frustrated by it, and because, like, there's parts of it that work. It, like, the flying stuff, there was a level. There's a level towards the end where it's only flying, and Pit and one of these goddesses are chatting it up like they're at a bar scene. And at one point, she points out that this level, and she explicitly states this level, is going to be a flying-only mission. That's kind of disappointing. I'm like, no! That's great! I'm so happy right now! And then he lands. I'm like, you lied to me! God damn it! Why?
The whole game is the Subspace Emissary with different characters. It's like, it's a game that I want to watch and that I find interesting, and I kind of wanted to just get through it.
Right.
But I did not, I never really enjoyed playing it.
Like, I don't know that I'm ever going to use the multiplayer, which people swear by, because it's got the same issue. It's all on... Why is the multiplayer on foot? It just seems like there's such glaring issues in both of these titles that they should have been fixed. So, I don't know. That's where I'm at. Next week, it's Code of Princess, so that could be an issue. We'll see.
Oh, boy.
We will see.
I hope you like it, James, for everyone's sake.
I do too.
Let me talk about a game that I really do like, a Nintendo game, actually. It's New Super Luigi U. And Billy, I know you've been playing this as well, and probably a lot of our listeners have been playing it. I think this is pretty damn good stuff. It is kind of a shame, although I certainly wasn't surprised to find that it uses exactly the same overworld. It has exactly the same bosses. It has the same music. It has pretty much the same graphics and all that stuff. I mean, it is a level pack. It is just a level pack. But the levels are really good. They find some really refreshing things to do with the elements in the game that you've already seen. Like, there's a level that you play with the penguin suit that is not only better than anything you ever did with it in the game that suit debuted in, which was New Super Mario Wii. But it's probably my favorite level in New Super Mario Brothers, period. I mean, it's just you're sliding through the entire level. And I learned to do things in that level with the penguin suit I didn't even know that suit was capable of doing. Like, I didn't know you could slide through bricks. I didn't know you could slide across the water. Or if I knew that, I'd forgotten it because it'd been so long since I did it. Because it's like a bonus item in this game.
Right, and they don't really use it that much for those specific things in the original game.
Right. It's really rare. You can kind of only get it in secret levels, and then there's nothing really designed around it because they don't know that you're going to have one. Well, you go into this level in the Luigi stages, and there's just a block right in the front, and it's actually required that you hit this block in order to get up to the pipe and start the level. So they know that you have a penguin suit when you go down that pipe, and the entire rest of the level is you mastering the penguin suit, and it's insanely fun. That was such a breath of fresh air. There's another level where you've seen levels where, like, strings of coins will sort of be moving through the level kind of on their own. They're, like, kind of on a pathway, and you can kind of jump up and try to get them. Maybe you can hit a P-switch and turn them into bricks. Well, in this game, in this level, the whole level has all these formations of bricks that just kind of – they pop up out of the poison water, and then they go back down. And sometimes they arc across in, like, a rainbow, and you can jump on it and hit a block – if you're really fast, but if you're not fast enough, they'll retract right back down and send you down to death. So it's not shockingly new, and you don't play it totally differently than anything else, but it's just fresh. It's something that you haven't seen before, and because they're bricks, you can sometimes break through them. Sometimes if you're not Super Mario, then they can really be a hindrance because you can't break through them. So there's just a lot of little interesting twists and turns that they can do on it. The fact that you have this 99-second time limit on every single level helps the pace so much, And it feels like I'm blasting through these levels a lot faster than I did with the main game. And I'm totally fine with that because I've already played a whole game of this, right? And a fair bit of this content is stuff I've already done before, like the bosses, you know, like I wish they didn't even have the bosses, frankly, because they weren't that great to begin with and they're not very hard at all. And, you know, if they're not going to redo them, I'd prefer that they just kind of skip them, frankly, but whatever, you know, you jump on their head three times and it's all over. But I love the fact that these levels are shorter and that you have to play them faster. And there is a sense of, I never feel like I don't have enough time to get through the level, but there is definitely a sense that you can't just dilly-dally. And, you know, it also informs where they hide things and where the secret passages are, because they have to be kind of in your way. Like, they have to be things that you can, if you make just a slight adjustment on your jump, now you're on a secret path. Because they know that you don't have time to just walk through and check every single wall. It's very, very smart. And I love this effect. Billy, I wonder if you noticed this. There's almost this caveman art that's on the walls where they've hidden little Luigi symbols and little pixel art of 8-bit Luigi and little statues and little ice sculptures of Luigi. And they're all over the place, especially when you find a secret. They'll just be hidden away. And it's just, it doesn't do anything. It's just, can you find them? You know, it's just really, really clever stuff. And sometimes they're hidden very, very well. And it's just such a nice little treat every time you ever see one. So there's just little subtle things that have been done in the art design that do make it feel like a Luigi game.
I'll be honest with you. I've only played a handful of the beginning levels. Because once I realized that, I mean, it's kind of like a remix, you know, and granted Luigi has different properties and how he moves. And I like how he moves and the fact that the stages, you know, are forced to reflect that. Because he can jump higher than Mario, etc. So, like, that's the thing I like about New Super Mario Brothers is the fact that, like, I can dick around and I can explore and see where the secrets are and things like that. And, like, I, all of a sudden I'll get the warning that time's ticking down and I'm, like, halfway through the level and I'm like, well, shit, like, okay, and I gotta haul ass through it. So, so it kind of turns it into a speed run for me.
Totally a speed run game.
You know, and that kind of turned me off a little bit. But that being said, like, I thought it was, you know, it's definitely unique, you know, and it's a nice change of pace, especially, you know, if you already played this and you still like this world, you still like all the same elements, well, now you get all those same elements again, but in a new package. And I think that's cool. I do look forward to trying out some of the later levels. I will sadly admit that this is one of the first Mario games that I have yet to finish. I have, like, I'm on World 8 of the main game, so I kind of want to finish that and then jump to this. It's challenging. That's the other thing, too, I will say. Because you have to haul ass, I died a lot more. And I'm like, this is the third freaking level, and I'm dying a lot, you know? And
well, they know that you've already played at least some of the main game. So they know that you're not a beginner.
But it's also the fact that they are going to be selling this at retail with just this game.
And true.
Which is also going to be interesting, because if some kid gets this and they're like, they haven't played Mario for a while, they're going to get their ass handed to them.
Suck
like,
it up, youngster.
Good.
Welcome to old school.
Well, it kind of brings me back to Super Mario Sunshine, which was a very challenging game, and it was, you know, very much a sequel to Mario 64, but when you played Sunshine, it would have been very beneficial if you had just come off of playing through Mario 64. So you had that whole skill set and you were experienced and you had that training and you were just coming off of that and then started Sunshine. Where this, you should be coming off of Mario and then playing Luigi.
Yeah.
Because then, you know, you're already fluid. You feel comfortable with, like, having to haul ass and all that. So, like, I feel like I needed, because it's been so long since I played, you know, New Super Mario, that, like, I needed, like, kind of a refresher, like, okay, this is how you need to get back into it and kind of warm up. And it kind of throws you straight into the fire. So, you know, if you die a lot, don't get frustrated. At least I did, you know, but it's cool. Like, it's more you know, and I think it's a very interesting, you know, when they announced it, I thought it was very interesting that they decided to go this route. Nobody expected him to do it because they've never really done anything like this before.
Yeah.
It's so different than the DLC levels for New Super Mario Bros. 2.
Oh, yeah. Those are where they sell them in level packs and they're very gimmicky.
Yeah. Like, this actually felt like it was much more fleshed out. I mean, they can shit out Mario levels left and right. They've got a whole freaking army.
They have a school that teaches you to make them.
So, I mean, they can barf these out, like, left and right. But, I mean, you know, for me, I guess I would have liked to have seen more new conventions. Like, add more to the mix of this game and this world. Because, you know, I thought the original game added so many new things to New Super Mario Brothers that made this game so awesome that I would like to see more new awesome instead of, you know, it's just kind of like a...
I think you should keep playing. I think there's more new to this than you might realize, and the first world is not the best representation of that.
Okay.
But I really think this is such a great value. For $20, you get, what is it, 90-something levels? I mean, they replace every single level in the game, including the Star Road levels, including all the secret paths are still there on the overworld. So if you get to a point and you remember there being a secret path out of it in Mario, there's still going to be one. But since the level itself has changed, now they've created two new exits. And, you know, and so you have to figure out all over again, how the heck do I find that secret path, even if you know it's there? I think the levels are very, very cleverly designed. And it's true that you do have to play it at more of a breakneck pace, but I actually like that a lot more than I thought I was going to, because it does feel different. Like, you know, with all the complaints that we've got too many Mario games and too many 2D platformers coming out on Wii U, and I even bought another one. I also bought Mutant Muds Deluxe this week, which I'm really enjoying. And I've even played most of that game before, and I'm still enjoying going back through it. But what surprises me is that the Luigi content, it really does feel much more different than I was expecting. And I feel like you get a lot for what you pay.
Yeah, $20 is a hell of a deal.
And it's only 7 months after, and maybe that's a problem for some people, but at the same time, I mean, you talked about Sunshine. Of course, Sunshine is very different from 64, but in that case, you might not have retained those skills because that game came out 6 years later, whereas in this case, it's only taken them 7 months, and they've made a game that feels more different than I would have imagined possible in that amount of time, because they've done things. And the physics, by the way, I was a little worried about playing the whole game as Luigi because he is floatier and he jumps higher and he has more momentum and it's hard. But like, they actually use the fact that it's harder for him to stop and change directions. They use it as a way to motivate you to just keep going forward. So it actually is very synergistic with the time limit and with the shortness of the levels and with the pacing of the way that everything is kind of laid out in the levels. You don't want to stop. You want to just keep going forward because that's Luigi's natural state. And that's the way that you're supposed to play the game. And it feels totally fine.
The gold coins, too, which that throws in, because it is a compressed level. And they're not really hidden. They're there. But you're like, I have 99 seconds. I have to fucking haul ass. Screw you, gold coins. I just need to get through this.
I'll come back for you later.
Yeah, I'll figure this shit out later. But like, and this is, like, I'm on, like, the fourth level, and I'm going, Jesus, forget it. Like, and that's what, I think that's because I'm kind of with the first game, like, I was a perfectionist. Like, I want to get all the gold coins, so I kept playing and playing until I did it. But, you know, you have more time in the first game. In this one, you need to memorize a level to pick your path so you get the gold coins one straight through. Because, say you fell down a big, you know, like, those levels that have a lot of verticality, say you fell down a lot, that could screw you at the end of it. You know what I mean?
You can always pick up one and then save and then go back to the level and get the other one because they accumulate. You don't have to get all three in one run.
Oh, yeah.
So that helps a lot. And, you know, I also think the you know, the idea of you being in a hurry and having to get them, maybe I'm just attuned to it because while I was downloading the Luigi stages, I'd already gotten the patch for the Pro Controller. And I never finished all the Star Roads and get all the Star Coins in the Mario game. And so, and I'd really been regretting that. I was like, I really want to master this game and, you know, see the final level and get all the Star Coins. And I had most of them, but there were just a couple on the Star Road that were really just brutal. And I went back to that game now with the Pro Controller in hand and had a lot more success, although it was still very, very challenging. But some of those levels are auto-scrolling, or because like there's a level with a P-switch where you have to hit like 7 P-switches in a row and just run like mad all the way through the entire level, because it's, if at any point you wait, you hesitate and the P-switch turns off, now you're standing on coins and you're just going to die. So you really have to just have this breakneck pace, and it's very difficult, but very rewarding when you kind of finally get the rhythm of it and you master it. And I think that was the perfect preparation for Luigi, because it feels like the whole game is like that. The whole game isn't that hard, but it's all kind of set up that same way, where it's really designed for you to just keep running, and you're not going to have to stop and change directions to get a star coin. You're just going to have to do something a little extra risky while you keep moving forward. And it's up to you to decide whether you want to do that now, or maybe come back for it later, or maybe just give up on it and just move on with the game, you know? But I'm very, very, very happy with it, and I love playing this game with the Pro Controller. That is awesome.
I should try that.
I'll still sometimes play it on the gamepad if I'm away from the TV, you know? Maybe I'm at the computer watching something on Hulu, and I want to keep playing Mario, but for the most part, I'm playing it on the TV with the Pro Controller, and it works really, really well. So why don't we move back to John real quick? John, why don't you tell us about one of these RPGs you've got?
All right. Really not too much to say about Dragon Quest IX. I just kind of hopped back into that, and it's, you know, really nice, you know, having the story up to this point sort of feature that they have that actually let me kind of hop back into it. The one thing I don't like about it is kind of the overworld design, the way things are sort of hemmed in. I always feel like it's kind of like, I think with such a huge world, it's sort of how they kind of tackle that problem of not being able to display all of it at once sort of thing. And so it always feels like there's just like arbitrary stairways in the middle of a field kind of thing that lets you hop up into the next area so the game can kind of paint that area for you. Just feels kind of weird. It's just kind of strange, and I think it's kind of something they had to sacrifice to pull it into 3D. So, but you know, I'm gonna hop back into it. I'm actually at the point where I'm so early in the game. I'm embarrassed to say this, but I'm at the first part where you hop back on the Starlight Express, and that pretty much opens up the rest of the game, I'm assuming. So I mean, I haven't even done 10 quests in it. It's ridiculous.
Yeah. That's actually not as early in the game as you might think, because that game has a pretty slow intro.
Yeah.
It takes quite a long time to kind of get to the point where you can explore a little bit.
Yeah. So I'm definitely going to, it's been kind of sitting there mocking me, and I really haven't really dug into a Dragon Quest game for a long time. So I'm going to have that going in the background.
Nice. Well, it's going to be a while before we get 7, and maybe forever before we get 10. So now is probably a good time to go back and play a little bit more of it. I think that's a delightful game.
Yeah, I'm really curious to see what's going to happen. Speaking of 10, I'm really curious to see exactly what's going to happen with that, because it just seems like it has fallen off the map in terms of coming to the West. It just doesn't really seem like anything's happening with it.
I was very disappointed. And by the way, I did promise people that I would ask about it. I only ran into one person, and I think it was at Square Enix's booth, who I thought might be able to say something about it, and they had no idea what I was talking about. I tried.
I really have to wonder if Square Enix actually, I wonder if they, at this point, kind of regret bringing it to Wii and Wii U. I have to wonder, because
I'm sure they do.
Yeah, I mean, that's the thing, because I don't know if they could have anticipated pretty much the Wii falling off a cliff and Wii U coming out and really not selling well.
Didn't Nintendo publish it in Japan?
Yes, I think they did, which is unusual, because usually with the Dragon Quest games, Square Enix will publish it in Japan, and then Nintendo of America will publish it over here, and Nintendo Europe will publish it in Europe. And that may continue to be the case with 7. That's what I kind of expect, is that 7 will end up being one of those games that is part of Nintendo's, you know, we're going to start localizing games from Japan and release them over here,
yeah,
which is right. Really all about 3DS games, really.
But with an MMO, that localization is going to multiply immensely.
Yeah.
And that's, especially since the user base for Wii U, I mean, I've seen the differences between the two. I sure as hell wouldn't want to play it on Wii. And plus, you have all the functionality of the pad with Wii U. I would, and the higher resolution. Like,
you have all the online connectivity of Wii U is so much better. You know, just the being able to find people, being able to communicate with people.
With an MMO, I mean, having a gamepad like that would be immensely helpful. on a console.
Yeah.
Immensely helpful.
It would be nice if it did come to the States, considering the fact that, you know, there's sort of that lack of Wii U software. You know, that would be a hell of a one to come out with.
Yep.
And talk about a meaty game.
Yeah.
I haven't completely given up on Dragon Quest X. I still think it's even possible they might be rejiggering it in some way to make it
more Western approachable.
Well, less onerous for them to maintain.
I mean, that's possible. My guess is that it comes out, but ultimately it's at Nintendo's dime. And I think that's probably the only way it ends up working for anybody.
Yeah, I don't think Square Enix brings that game over here at all. But again, Square Enix hasn't released a Dragon Quest game in America since 8, which was 2005.
Yes. And for Nintendo, as a business proposition, they just have to decide if this fills out enough of the checkboxes on their lineup that it's worth it.
Right.
I don't think that proposition is as easy as it would seem.
I just think the overhead, I just think it's something. I mean, I think you guys are totally right. I don't think the Square Enix would even bother bringing it over here. I think it would have to be Nintendo, which means that Nintendo would have to maintain it and do all that kind of stuff with help from Square Enix. But it's just...
Well, and they'd have to learn how to maintain it.
That's exactly it, right? It's like it's just not their area of expertise.
They need to learn at some point.
And it's not just they'd have to learn, the NOA would have to learn.
Yeah, I still feel like it's a possibility for 2014 because, you know, because the game is going to be more expensive for them to localize and to run after it's launched, they're going to want a bigger install base. Like, they don't want to sell 1,000 copies of this. They need to sell 100,000 or 500,000 copies of it. And that's impossible today on Wii U. Like, in Japan, they could release this as, it was effectively almost a launch game in Japan. I guess it came out, what, January or February on the Wii U version?
Yeah, but the beta was there.
But people in Japan will buy a Wii U just to play this game. That's not true in the West.
This is a subscription title in Japan, right?
It is, but so was Monster Hunter back in the day.
But Monster Hunter is not an MMO, though.
Well, and neat, that's the thing. Dragon Quest X kind of isn't either.
Yeah, you're right. It's kind of a hybrid.
Well, it's much more like Phantasy Star Online. So there's kind of a hub world. This is my understanding. There's kind of a lobby world, which is like a town. And you can see lots and lots and lots of people in there. But then you form up in parties of like 4 people and you go out and you do a quest. So it's much more like Phantasy Star Online, which is also a game that used to have a subscription and then at some point became, you know, just free. The kind of peer-to-peer networking that's required to do a 4-player party is not a huge deal. You don't need these giant dedicated servers to do that kind of a thing.
Well, it's like Monster Hunter.
Yeah, exactly.
So you're suggesting Nintendo add a cash shop to Dragon Quest X?
I think there is one anyway.
That's the question that I have, is what business model would they use for this? I mean,
there are microtransactions already.
They wouldn't go Monster Hunter. I mean, they would probably go free to play with it.
I think they go free to play. Well, not free to play. I think you still have to buy the game.
Well, yeah.
I think it's a non-subscription game in the West, but they can potentially make a lot of money on just these transactions, you know, just people playing it a lot. And it is a game that, you know, it's going to have a kind of a small cult fan base here in the West, but those people love Dragon Quest so much, they might be willing to spend a lot of money on it. So, I don't know.
Yeah, it would be interesting to see if Nintendo could pull it off. I would be impressed if they actually did go that route, if they tried something, because for them, I would think that would be pretty daring.
Right.
To experiment with that kind of business model.
I mean, you'd have to do it in such a way that people who don't engage in cash shoppery would feel like they're still getting their money for the game, because ultimately they still paid $60 for this game.
Yeah, that's the question, right? Like, that I would have is would Nintendo's audience be willing to participate in that kind of business model? I mean, you can do that on the PS3. You could do that even on Xbox One, because those people, they get it, you know, they know the whole thing, but just Nintendo's audience, don't know if it's necessarily there.
Yeah, I think the microtransaction stuff is mostly cosmetic in that game. Or I think you can pay to get like a bigger house to put more stuff into it and stuff like that. But it's not super relevant to the actual gameplay.
See, I think you'd need to expand it, though, for it to be a viable economic. You need to be constantly adding things for people to buy.
Yeah.
You know, it's just like any other MMO where there's like, you know, there's shit to do at certain holidays and blah, blah, blah. There's always new content that's there. And, you know, if they brought that stuff here, I mean, I would love to play that game.
Oh, absolutely, yeah.
You know, give me another game to play in my Wii U that's fun, but giving me another Wii U game that I can play online with friends, Hell yeah, that would be terrific.
But we're not going to take a GIMPed version of it. And people, I don't see any possible way that game can be viable as a subscription model over here. There's just not nearly enough people who are willing to spend $10 or $15 a month to play it.
Yeah, absolutely.
There's no way. But I do think that game potentially could be successful. And if Nintendo passes on it, I hope that they'll let Square Enix give it a shot, or maybe even they make some weird deal with XSEED and let them try it. I mean, I don't know, but I really hope that game comes over here. Dragon Quest VII, the remake for 3DS, I feel much better about. I feel highly confident that's coming eventually. It's just going to take a while. But I'm almost more excited about that one because they've rebalanced a lot of the game for the 3DS version. They fixed a lot of problems that people had with the pacing of the original game. And that's the only previous Dragon Quest game that I have not played to pretty much to completion. Because I never did play it on PS1. It was very hard to find, and it was kind of not a great game. Especially the English version is particularly bad, I think. So I'd love to get a chance at that one. So before we finish up this podcast, I did play some Quantum Conundrum, but I'm only halfway through it. So I'll talk about that next week probably. But before we go, and especially since we have Billy here, I wanted to cover one last topic that I didn't get a chance to do last week. And that's, I kind of wanted to tell people about my experience being on Weekend Confirmed, because I think it was pretty interesting. And it's a very, very different kind of podcast than what we do here. And that's what made it interesting for me. It was just such a different setting. Of course, Billy's been on it many times especially back when he lived in LA. He was on it pretty frequently. And so I thought maybe we could give people a peek behind the curtains, and hopefully they'll find that interesting. You know, the cool thing about Weekend Confirmed, if you never listened to it before, they all record it in the same room, which is, I guess, how most, you know, so-called professional podcasts, that's how most of them are done. It's different than how we do it. But they not only all record in the same room, they record it in a professional recording studio, which is something I'd never even seen before. I'd never even been at a place like that before. So it's in Santa Monica.
It's a little overkill. Like, you know, it is, but it's plush as shit. I mean, that's where they do professional Hollywood recording.
Yeah.
VO work and also music stuff. Like, you saw those platinum records on the walls and shit like that. Like,
oh yeah, the room that they have the table with the microphone set up in also has a grand piano in it. It's that crazy. And then there's like a double sided window, you know. So like when you're in the recording room, it's just a mirror because the engineer would be too distracting. So on the other side of that is like the engineering room or the mixing room, and it's also kind of a waiting room for people who are waiting or who just want to watch or who are waiting for their turn to be on the podcast. So I spent a lot of the time while I was there in the engineering room. So they've got, you know, this young lady is working the mixing board and she's adjusting levels and shit all the time. And then at the same time, there's like behind that, there's like a little table and a row of chairs for people to sit in. So I was up there. Their producer, Del Rio, is not actually in the room with the guys recording. He's back in the engineering room and he's like taking notes and checking his phone, and he's got a stopwatch app on his phone. And like every 10 or 15 minutes, he'll tell Garnett that, you know, how much time has passed. And that's how they keep it on pace, because they do these very strict 30-minute segments and they do four of those every week. So it's always very consistently 2 hours long, like plus or minus 5 minutes at the most. And I always wondered how they stay on schedule that well, because we have massive problems with this, right?
What is the schedule?
Yeah, it's because the producer of the show and the person who's kind of maintaining the pace and the sequence of the show is not on the show, so he can actually keep track of this stuff and pay attention to it. So Del Rio has this little wireless box that has a microphone in it. And so anytime he wants to communicate with the guys in the room, he pushes a button there and he'll say, 20 minutes, 20 minutes, time to wrap. And they hear it in their headphones, but you don't hear it on the recording. It's not actually picked up by the microphones.
Right. It's like a radio setup, basically.
It's really cool, and I'd always kind of wondered how they take care of that. And so for me, a lot of the experience when I wasn't actually at the table talking, I'm sitting back in the engineering room playing Picross E on my 3DS and just listening to the podcast, because I couldn't even see the guys really well, because the viewing angle wasn't that great. Like, I could see the table, but I couldn't even see Garnett very well because he was over on the side. So there wasn't that much to look at. It's just dudes talking from fairly far away. So I'm just kicking back in the chair, drinking my Irish coffee, playing 3DS while I listen to Weekend Confirmed, which is like every Saturday morning. So for me, it was a real trip because like I ended up experiencing a lot of the show the same way that I always do, which is like I'm doing something else. I'm playing a game or I'm, you know, just doing whatever while I listen to the show and I'm cracking up and I'm like, you know, shouting back at them when they say something funny. Of course, they can't hear me because it's a soundproof room. But it was very faithful to how I often consume that show. Just it's all happening live and it's just one room over. And then when I got to go in there and sit down at the table with them, it's a very strange experience for me.
You stepped into the album.
It was weird, man. Like we're all sitting around this table and we've got these big microphones on these stands that are like right in front of us. So we have all this equipment. And the weirdest thing is when you talk, you hear your voice in your headphones, which is not how it works over Skype, the way we record this show. And that took a lot of getting used to. And the other thing is that there, I was in there with, yeah, I'm on there with Arthur Gies and Justin McElroy and Jeff Cannata and Garnet Lee. And these are all like guys with really big personalities. They know each other really well. I'm kind of the outsider. Like, I don't know any of them very well at all. I never even met a couple of those guys before I sat down at the table with them. And so it's like I had 2 pages of notes, you know, of stuff I wanted to talk about with Nintendo. We got through maybe a third of it because it's just very dynamic. It's a lot of back and forth and crosstalk because they don't have to take that stuff out afterward. When you're looking at someone face to face, it's a lot easier to avoid talking over each other, right? So there's more back and forth. It's a more dynamic conversation. And everybody has kind of their own agenda, and it's also super fast paced because they've got like this hard 3-hour time limit in the studio. That's how long they've got to do the show. And so it's all very snappy and you're constantly moving forward. And it just felt so frantic. And I'm really nervous the whole time. And I'm like, I really, really want to talk about these 3 games. I really want to get this point across. And you know, it was very intense, but a lot of fun, a lot of fun.
Yeah, there's a lot of, I would imagine there's a lot of pressure. You have to get in, speak your piece, get out.
Well, it's different during an E3 show when it's just the 4 people that aren't being cycled and it's a 2-hour show or whatever.
That's true.
You know, it's a little easier, but like, you know, Garnett's trying to cycle people through and there are so many topics because, you know, yeah, we're going to take a couple hours and talk about all of E3. Well, that's a lot of shit.
They don't talk throughout the week. This is it.
Right, right.
Hey, dude, you did a great job, man.
Well, thank you.
Very good, Johnny.
I just kind of wanted to give people a peek at the process there because it was, as a fan of that show, and I've listened to every episode of that show since it started, and I've been listening to Garnett since 2006 when I first discovered podcasts, and he's a lot of the reason that I'm here doing this, and I, you know, a lot of us on NWR could probably tell a similar story. So for me to be there doing a show with him and being on that show that I listened to was really trippy. And then the switch around of the setting and the equipment and everything being so different than it is for us when we record our show. It was just a very interesting experience. I was incredibly nervous the whole morning. I mean, I had to get up at like 6 a.m. to get to Santa Monica on time, and because I rode a bus all the way there. And I barely slept the night before. I was really sick. And I got there and I was like guzzling coffee and Irish cream and donuts. And it was, I was physically in pretty bad shape. But, you know, all I cared about was I want to make sure we actually talk about Nintendo on this show because that's what I came to do. And that's why I'm here. And I got to do that, you know, and I would love to have been on the entire show, but he had a lot of people there to cycle through And I was very grateful for the opportunity. So yeah, if people haven't heard it yet, I hope you'll check it out. It's probably not as exciting or relevant a couple weeks after the fact, but I just thought it was a cool experience to share.
Oh, you got some pretty good reviews on NeoGAF. Somebody said they thought you would be insufferable, but you actually weren't.
People were really nice on GAF.
On NeoGAF, that's like huge. That's like huge props.
I thought all the people there, including Arthur, were very nice to me, and I felt very welcome. It was a real treat. But anyway, that's my story. We're gonna have to wrap up this show. Billy, what do you got to plug, man?
Skulls of the Shogun is now available on Steam by now.
All right.
It's awesome. Well, actually, no, you can pre-order now and you get the full multiplayer beta, which is like 36 multiplayer levels. You get the full first level of the single-player campaign to try out, but all the multiplayer is there. It looks great on Steam, and they're constantly updating it for like ridiculously high resolutions that I don't even know what kind of a monitor or video card you need, but people are asking for it and they're doing it. So, you know, they brought me in just to launch that, and I'm done with that. But yeah, other than that, you know, I think you guys did a great job at E3. You know, it was fun bumping into you guys regularly. And, you know, it was great to see everybody, and I'm glad we can confirm worked out for you, and that's awesome. So,
yeah, dude.
You know, hopefully he'll have you back on again, because God knows they need somebody that knows something about Nintendo on that show.
I agree. I hope I can do it again sometime. So thanks, man. And before we go, you know, I wanted to let people know about our schedule next week. So the live Famicast will be happening probably the day before you hear this. So we don't have a plug for that. It's already happened. I hope you got to participate in it. But we're probably hopefully going to have a recording of that for your normal episode next week. So if you do miss it, and I know it's going on at some unusual times for some people, especially if you're in Europe, it's like 2 or 3 in the morning. That really sucks. But hey, it's a worldwide show and it's live. You can't please everybody. There's just, as we learned with Nintendo Direct at E3, there is no ideal time for everyone in every time zone to do it simultaneously. But if you're not able to do the live Famicast, keep an eye on the RFN feed, because we're going to try to get a recording of that thing up so that you can listen back to what happened. And that will probably be the substitute for a regular episode of RFN next week, because 4th of July, man. In America. Now, Guillaume is, maybe he'll go off and do his one man show, but for those of us living in America, 4th of July is kind of a big deal. It's on our normal recording day. And so the days before and after that are all fucked up, and we're probably all going to have plans. So we're not planning to record a normal episode next week. We're going to take a little bit of a summer vacation, come back next time with a big show for you. So please look forward to it. We're probably kicking off a new retroactive soon. Send in your suggestions for that and any other emails you might have about what's going on in the world of video games. That address is rfn@nintendoworldreport.com. And you can always find a link over at NWR. We hope you'll check it out. Thank you, Billy, James, and John for being here. Good luck to Guillaume with his computer, and we'll see you guys next time.
Peace to your mother.
Later.